have some gospel. Would you please whisper prayer for this part of the service? And also, I'm a little bit tedious, so I'm going to ask you to try to pay attention. What we have this morning, got an old familiar story. I want to tell it to you like a story, partly. Topic of my little discourse this morning is, come see a man. Come see a man. And I want to start way back in history. Oh my. 2,600 years ago, well actually before that, God had been dealing with the people ever since Moses, ever since Abraham, but especially since Moses. Gave them a law, gave them a nation, gave them a government, defended them. Blessed their crops, gave them some hills where they could dig out metal, things of the sort. Fixed them all up, and looked like they had everything they could need, but they kept straying away from it. And he'd send reformers, and he'd send prophets. And they'd have good kings and they'd have bad kings, but gradually the bad kings outweighed the good kings and they just kept getting worse and worse. And he tried to tell them all the time, I'm God. There's one God. I'm the God that created you. But they found themselves praying to rocks and sticks, and down in Egypt they prayed to bugs and birds and crocodiles and jackals and stuff like that. God would lead them out and deliver them, and wouldn't be very long till they'd be doing the same thing, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse, until finally God sent them down into Babylonian captivity. He let the evil king come up, take them over, lead them away. And when you did, when that old king did that, that's about 600 years ago, 2,600 from here, 600 before Christ, well, it left. There weren't very many people left in the land. You can imagine what it'd be like in Shawnee. They got all the people that they could use for something. That's what you do when you're making a bunch of slaves. You get the smart ones. You get the strong ones. So they get the bankers and they get the lawyers and they get the doctors and people like that. And they left the ones. If they'd have come by my place, they'd left me. They look me over and say, that guy's too old. He's not going to make it all the way down here to Babylon. Besides, he doesn't know very much anyway. And we're going to roll him off in a ditch somewhere between here. And they just leave him alone. Well, that's who they left in the land. The riffraff, the ne'er-do-wells. Some guys got a bottle in each hand, you know. And some people don't work very hard. And they left the pure, poor of the land, the scripture said, because they weren't very valuable for anything. So they just left them there. And better to stay up here and starve than it is to go down there and for us to have to take care of them. But it wasn't enough that they left. The land was getting desolate. Land kind of goes back to nature, I guess you'd say it, if they don't have anybody there. And the king knew better than that. So he gathered up some people and he sent them in there to live in the land, northern part of Israel, where the Israelites had been before. And I'm not going to read you all of this and take you too long. Now, I know the time changed too, and if I take too long reading, I'm afraid you'll all go to sleep on me. So I ask you to stay awake and pray for me instead. So he gathered up the people that he could and put them in the land, and what a mixture he got. They were from all the neighboring areas around there, not names you're familiar with. They're not Philistines. They're not Midianites. They're the Kuhath, the Ava, the Hamath, the Sepharvaim. People who didn't fear the Lord, didn't know anything about God. And they got in there and the lions got after them. And other wild beasts. And so they sent a message over to the king and they said, we don't know the God of this land. We don't know who to pray to. And so since we're not praying to the right God, he's letting the lions get after us. And the king believed in things like that too. So he got a hold of the Israelites and said, who is your God? And they told him about Jehovah. So, all right, let's gather up some people who know about Jehovah and send him in there too. And they gathered up these people I'm telling you about, the riffraff, the the ne'er-do-wells, the ones that really weren't very serious about their religion, but they didn't know what the law was, and they sent them in there. And these people made them their priests in the high places, the most holy places that they had. And over a process of time, these folks invented their own religion. And they got enough knowledge from these Jews. You understand what I'm telling you? These are not the upper crust of Jews. These are the ones that are down here. You know, they had to learn the first five books of the Old New Testament, of the Old Testament, by the time they were 10 years old or so. But these are the ones that only got two of them. But they knew something about it. And so they made them their priests. And they taught them some about the law. And they got enough of it so that they understood that there was to be a temple and there was to be a law. And they made their own temple. But it wasn't at Jerusalem. And so these are the people that became the Samaritans. When you see that word in the Bible, that's who it's talking about. They were in northern Israel. They were in land that had belonged to Israel. And they were a little bit like Israel. But what a mess of Israelites they were. And when you look at all of that and say, now the reason that all of this happened is because God gave the Israelites a vision of what he wanted them to be. And they just rejected it and rejected it and rejected it until he wouldn't put up with it anymore. And let them be sold down into slavery. Well, there were some of them that still stayed believers. There was Daniel, for instance. And the three Hebrew children. There were Nehemiah. There were some. Well, Josephus says when it came time for the Jews to go home, about 10% of them. That's not very many. But you can imagine that 10% had got enough of pagan worship and didn't want anything more to do with it. So that's what happened. They went back to Jerusalem and rebuilt the city. And to this day, Jews are hard against anything that has to do with believing in more than one God. They got cured of worshiping rocks and bugs and crocodiles and stuff like that and never went back to that again. But what about these people in northern Israel? Well, you talk about prejudice. You talk about hostility and resentment and not wanting to have anything to do with some people. It's not just racial. These people have been a threat to our religion. They're in our land. And the very essence of what they are is everything that's damaged us and that we're against. They won't have anything to do with it. And on the other hand, we read in the New Testament quite a bit about that sort of thing. The Samaritans, the Good Samaritan, remember his story? Well, they were just as bad as the Jews in their way. They didn't like the Jews any better than the Jews liked them. Now, Jesus. This was the situation when Jesus was there. Isn't it amazing the way people are? Cain, he got a younger brother. The younger brother's getting closer to God than he is. And the only thing he can think of to do is conk him on the head. How is that going to make him get closer to God? But there is something about people that don't think reasonably when it comes to things like that. They just follow their passions, you know. It looks like a sensible man would go to his brother and say, "Now, that's working pretty good. What are you doing? How do you get closer to God?" And they could have had a brotherly conversation. They could have both got closer to God. No, you got to bop him. And when you do that, you cost yourself all your butter, all your milk, all your veal, and all the wool that you'd been getting because they were all coming from his sheep. And you get exiled from your family and you don't have any brother with you anymore. You're alone in the world. That's what he got for it. Sin's always that way. We decide to take our own course. Most people, in reality, are their own worst enemies. And so it was a poor old king. And it's been that way ever since. And that's what the Jews and the Samaritans were to each other at the time of my story. Jesus was in Jerusalem. An awfully lot of Jesus' ministry was carried out at Capernaum. Capernaum's where Peter lived. Capernaum's on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. And seemed to be a special home for Jesus, different ways. He was traveling from Jerusalem to Capernaum. It's pretty good a hike, if you look at it on the map. And the route lies right through Samaria, where the Samaritans live. Now, the typical Jew wouldn't go that way. There is an alternate route that you can take, and you can imagine if you're walking. I tried to guess about how far it is, mapping it out last night. Going to add something like 30 miles walking extra to your journey. Got to cross the Jordan River. Rather do that than walk through the land of the Samaritans. But Jesus didn't do that. He walked through the land of the Samaritans, and he was a man, and he had feelings. And he came to the well of Jacob. It was in the land of Samaritans. Now, Jacob was one of Jesus' ancestors. Oh, there's a lot of stir in our world today about what our ancestors have been and what he all ought to inherit because of what our ancestors have been. People fussing with one another and stuff like that. Jesus didn't have a bit of that. He got there to the well. Story's in the fourth chapter of John. I don't want to take the time to read it all to you. It's over a chapter long, and I'm supposing you've heard it before. But Jesus got there to the well, Jacob's well, and sat down on the edge of the well. And by my estimate, again, it's about a mile from there to the nearest village. Nobody knows exactly for sure where it was, but something in that range. He's hungry. It was the ninth hour, which is 12 o'clock. And so he told his disciples, go get us something and bring it back here. And we'll sit down by the water and have a meal. So off they went. Coincidence? Who knows the mind of God? Who knows when the Lord intends to cross your path? All without you planning it or suspecting it. Jesus arranged to be in Samaria at the well in Jacob. At 12 o'clock, at a time when a lady in that area decided she needed to water animals. And I don't know why she did that. I don't even know her name. But I have to think Jesus had something to do with that. And folks, Jesus got a plan for your life and mine too. He plans to come into your life, into your land. The Jews wouldn't walk through Samaria. But Jesus will walk through Samaria. He'll walk through your land. No matter how troubled the background. No matter how difficult the past. How mixed up and crazy and unexplainable it has been. No matter how contrary to everything the human understanding believes between right and wrong. Jesus Christ is willing to walk into your land and my land where we are. And have arranged before we knew anything about it. For us to be there, just you and him, at the right time, and have a conversation with you and me. His ways are past finding out. His wisdom is too much for me to grasp. But I tell you, I wouldn't be here today if the Lord hadn't done that for me. Has he done that for you? We all need the Lord and his mercy to come by and plan things that we cannot and pay us a visit. I covet your prayers. Jesus sat down in a well that was on Jacob's land. And the historians tell us, if you remember this story, when Joseph, before he died, required of his kinsmen, carry my bones out of the city, don't leave me here. This is where Joseph was buried. It had to have been a sentimental place in a way to the Lord. It's part of his heritage. We Christians have a heritage, too, of places where the Lord has met with us. It didn't mean that to this Samaritan woman. She came up and had her conversation with Jesus, and it was kind of a sassy little conversation. The Lord opened the discussion with a question. And if you read the Bible, there are so many times that he did that. When the apostles had been out fishing all night and drew near to the bank, he said, children, have you any bread? And he told the disciples that time, give ye the people to feed them. Some everyday, common sort of thing that you wouldn't think was serious. Just a man sitting there by the water. and ask for something to drink. The well's deep. I don't have any way to get water out of it. Would you draw some water for me? The Lord has a way to come by and ask you and me the simplest kind of a question. How are you getting along today? Sometimes Jesus asks his question through another needy person who's around us. We see somebody who don't have any shoes, who doesn't have any food to eat or something of the sort. Somebody who needs a hand on their shoulder. Sometimes that's Jesus coming by just with his little simple question. You got any interest to help somebody else out? And this lady said, what are you doing talking to me? Not only did the Jews not travel through Samaria, a Jew who met a woman by herself, a Jewish woman, would not talk to her. Now, that's not universal, but it was their commandment. If a Jew would not stay in the room with just a woman. They were that rigid with regard to it. And Jesus, to have this woman come up and approach, you would have expected her. Have you ever seen some of those people do that? I've seen some of that. They had turned their back on you. They didn't have anything to do with you. Well, that's what she would have expected this man to do. First, because she's a woman. And second, because she's a Samaritan. And in spite of that, I got it in my mind. The Bible doesn't say this. Can I read between the lines a little? Big, pleasant smile break over the Lord's face. Would you give me a drink of water? What are you doing talking to me? You're a Jew. You don't have your people would rather sit here and die of thirst than ask a Samaritan for a drink, because you know your religion is not the same as ours, and you look down on ours, and we kind of look down on you too. Besides, I'm a woman. And the Lord plowed right past all of that. He didn't even answer that. If you knew who it was that asked you to drink, you'd ask of me, and I'd give you living water. And that's when she got sassy with him. How are you going to do that? You're sitting on the edge of the... Look down in that hole. You see how deep that is? How are you going to get that out of there, you think? Well, you're going to get that out of there for me. I know, but that's not the kind of water that I'm talking about. Anybody give you this kind of water, you'll never be thirsty again. Well, I'm watering all these animals. That'd be pretty handy. Never have to do it again. So how do I get that? And look what the Lord said to her next. Maybe I should read it to it. Read it to it. As I say, it's in the 4th of John. If thou knewest the gift of God and who it is that saith to thee, and I say to you this morning, I want you to know the gift of God. And I want me to know it too. That's why we come to meeting. We need the gift of God. If you knew what it was, the Lord told this lady, you would ask of me. He would have given thee living water. The woman saith unto him, sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well and drank thereof himself? And his children and cattle, Jesus answered and said unto her, whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that shall be in him, and the water that I shall give him, shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman said, sir, give me this water. I want to talk to you a little bit about the difference between Jacob's water and Jesus' water. It was water. They needed it. It was water of the past. Here are the bones. Here is the well. Here is the history that goes all the way back to Abraham. Here then, here is the environment of our lives, our background, our past, the things that surround us, and they lead to our everyday circumstances and our everyday way of looking at things, and that carries with it all the baggage of the past, all the conflicts, all the issues that the past has held, good and bad. All these people with all their strange gods and the riffraff of the Israelites and went down and mingled among them and taught them half the law and didn't live any of the law and got them involved in the most awful things, and some of the best of them rose above that a little bit. And that's the whole mishmash of what was down there, and that's Jacob's water. Because that's where the well was, and that's what the past was. But Jesus came to give water of the future. This is the water of the past. Jesus came to give water of the future. And he said, this is living water. She said, I want some. Oh, folks, would God we, every one of us, had that same thirst today. I want some living water. How do I get it? And that's just what the Lord was waiting for. It's one of the things that make me think he had this all planned in advance. You see what he did next? You want the water? Well, there are terms. You can have it, but it just doesn't pour down on you. There are some conditions that have to be met. Where's your husband? Oh, my goodness. That is a problem. Where is my husband? I don't have a husband. And the Lord, and I mean, you want the living water? Here's the key to the living water. Your life is just like I've been talking about these Samaritans. You think this, your girls tell me, was she a flirt? She had five husbands. You think she was a flirt? Maybe a little bit? How do you get that kind of problem in your life? I had an uncle who told me, he knew I was involved in trying to preach to people, and he sat me down one time and he said, don't ever be a marriage counselor. He said, people get in the most awful rang doodles with each other and can't solve it, and you get into it and they'll both get mad at you. Can you imagine five of them trying to straighten out how that must have, I think of a dirt pudding stirred up and mixed in that poor woman's head with all the dreams that she started out with as a young woman. And nobody dreams, I sure hope, I get to marry five different people and they're all different. That's not natural. Having started out with the normal dreams of home and love and joy and happiness and been disappointed, didn't learn to disappoint other people, been lied to and learned how to lie, learned how to cheat, learned how to be bitter and hard, learned how to cry and get over it and get up and go on again. And that that could ever, ever be fixed? Jacob's water is never going to fix it. Jesus brought living water. And that's right where he put his finger. This is where your trouble is. I got an answer for this, lady. The living one. Where's your husband? Said, I got five. She didn't tell him that. He told her. You said correctly, you don't have any. She didn't tell him. How do you know that? Did I say to you a while ago, Jesus will walk through your land? Jesus knows your heart, brother. He knows what your life has been, daughter. He knows your tears and your sorrows. He knows why things have turned out in your life like they have. There is healing in Jesus Christ. He is the greatest counselor the world has ever known. He knows how to reach down to all the wounded, broken places and apply the balm of Gilead that can touch. We sing about it sometimes. A song that says, down in the human heart, crushed by the tempter, feelings lie buried that grace can restore. Touched by a loving hand, handled in mercy, chords that were broken can vibrate once more. Did you know the Lord can retune your spirit? He can break them. He can mend the broken strings. He can make the heart that's been filled with heartache and sorrow and grief once again sound the beautiful melodies of joy and happiness. And it starts with him saying to her, where's your husband? And she says, I don't have any. And I see in my mind the wall of her excuses building up. Now this man doesn't know anything about me, but he did know something about her. He knew all about her. And he started showing her. And now, if I'd go to find one somewhere that's been married five times, I'd say, I got to answer. Sit down here, you and me. I'm going to straighten you out. How far you think I'd get with that? But Jesus has such a gentle way of telling us things we don't want to hear, but we need to hear. I've had the Lord tell me things that if anybody else told me, I don't think I could take it. But he's got a way of telling me. This other day, he told me, you talk to your wife like a husband. He said, I want you to talk to your wife like a pastor. And I got to go back. Thank God I got a good one and go back. Roberta, I'm sorry. I had to pick it up. If she'd have told me that, I probably wouldn't have heard it as well. But when Jesus says it, how could you ever explain something like that? It isn't only the words that he says, it's the grace that he ministers with it. He tells you it's what you need to do, but he didn't just tell you. He gives you something sweet and gentle inside that makes it so it's practical for you to do that. You've had 5 husbands, and it's made a mess out of your life. Nobody could be happy that's got that kind of history behind them, but the Lord is saying, you give me both ends of the string, and I can untie the knots that are in it. We'll soak this big old knot in living water, and it'll come out. And folks, you and I can take our heartaches, our troubles, and our sorrows to the fountain of living water. And I can't tell you how it happens, because I'm not Jesus. But he knows what to do. So, he told her he has had 5. And that's all he said. Whom thou hast is not thy husband. Woman saith unto him, sir, I see you're a prophet. So let's talk about where to worship. And he said, our fathers said this mess that I've been describing to you. Your people say at Jerusalem, where do you say we should worship? Well, I got to admit there's something special going on here that I don't understand. Where do you say we should worship? And he said, well, in my language, Jerusalem is better than what the Samaritans had. There is more of God there. But he put himself in a different category. He said, neither at the place where you people built their temple, nor at Jerusalem. It's where people worship him in spirit and in truth. It's where Jesus is. He put himself above both the Samaritan religion and the Hebrew religion. Let's read what he said. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain. Jesus saith unto her, woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor read at Jerusalem worship the Father. The hour cometh and now is when the true worshipers shall worship the Father and in spirit and in truth, for the Father seeketh such to worship him. He's a spirit. We're Church of God Chapel. That's the name of it. But brother, we haven't got God locked in this chapel. And we haven't got him locked in a name. He is a spirit. We can no more contain God in our own hands than we can control the wind. He goes where he will, and he deals with every soul as he will. And we have the privilege, every one of us, to do what this woman went back to her village mates and invited them to do. Come see a man. Before us we had the worship of the Samaritans, and you know what the history was. And over here is the worship of the Jews. The Samaritans worship rocks and trees and rain and thunder and things like that. That's what there is, the heathen worship system. And the Jews over here in Jerusalem, they worship a temple. And inside that temple, they got this building and it's dead black inside the Holy of Holies. Pardon me, please. And nothing much in there. 2 cherubim and the ark, and that stuff wasn't there anymore at that time. And that's their sacred place. You're going to be a Jew, you got to go back to Jerusalem to worship. Everybody's supposed to command it to go back to Jerusalem. I got something better than that. He's invisible. Come see a man. Come meet a person. Folks, I met somebody who got thirsty. Can you imagine? The God that created the oceans came to this woman and said, I'm thirsty. He was a human being. He could feel what you and I feel. He shed tears. He lived life like you and I did. Those folks worshiped rocks. The folks at Jerusalem worshiped something invisible. The Lord Jesus Christ is saying to you and me, come see a man. He not only comes to us as a God, but he comes to us as a living, breathing human being who died like we will, who felt the things that we feel, and therefore is able to understand all the human temptations like no one else ever has been able to do. And yet, at the very same time, he told me all things that ever I did. He didn't just tell her about the 5. Listen, I have to think this conversation went on longer than just the things that John recorded for us here. Jesus searched her life. I don't know whether this means he did it by the Spirit and she was able to feel it, or maybe he told her some more things. I think as interested as she got, she might have laid out a lot of things to him. And Lord, what about this and what about that? Show me how the water applies to this. I know that you and I have the privilege to go to this same Jesus and ask him those very same things. Lord, pour the water on me. Look at the problem, man. I don't have five husbands, but the one that I got's gone. You took him away from me. He's not with me anymore, and I'm sad and I'm lonely. I won't pour this out to you. Lord, pour some of your living water on this. People are treating me wrong. People are trying to steal my property. I'm sick. Whatever it is. Living water. Living water right through the lips of a man. Somebody who feels it just like you and I did. That's what he came into this world to do. Come see a man. He said, don't, it's not just me. You folks come and see him. And this is one of the stories in the Bible that has a happy ending. The Bible said there were a bunch of those old Samaritans down there, so that's pretty interesting. We've known this lady quite a while, and she wasn't very impressive. She was a flirt. That's what she was. But something's happened to her. She doesn't look that way anymore. So let's go out and see. And he went out and saw. And Jesus stayed there. 3 days he stayed there. We don't read where they were just walking through on their way to Capernaum and sat down on the well. But did you know if you get interested in the living water, Jesus will sit down and stay with you and start teaching you some things to bring water to your soul. And he stayed there with them. And a bunch of those people believed. And you know why they believed? Because that same Jesus that made this plan for this woman, that could see the trouble in her life, she saw their life too. And he's here to see your life and my life too. Come see a man. Come and see him for yourself. When we invite him, we should invite. Tell people about him. I know very well, nothing but a dry tree. Can't say it like it really is. Can't do it. But I entreat the Lord and I beg him for services such as this. Lord Jesus, will you please help folks to see you are the fountain of living water. You have something to offer to every last one of us that can answer life's heartaches and problems and meet the inner need of our spirit. So I don't have any history of what happened to this woman. You think she lived saved the rest of her life? I don't know. She'd been in eternity a long time. I would like to hope so. There are a lot of people who meet Jesus at some time in their life and don't hold on to him. Don't be one of those. This really is the only answer for happiness that there is in life. I understand counseling can make a lot of difference in the way we apply the sacred water to our souls. But the old song says, other friends may bless and comfort, but the balm to heal the heartache, only Jesus can afford. And he's got that for you and me. Real living salvation where the Lord meets us. I offer one illustration of it. I had a dear friend. Had a complete nervous breakdown. He shook uncontrollably. He couldn't sleep. You ever been around somebody with a nervous breakdown? It's painful. He nearly drove his wife crazy. He had to have somebody take him in their home, which they did for a time. And he described this to me with a horror still in his eyes, and it was many years since that it happened. I said, how'd you get better? He said, in all my confusion and questioning and uncertainty, there came a day when the Lord said to me, forwards, little one, follow me. And he said, it lifted me out of my depression. Jesus can do things for you and me that nobody else can do. The secret is to come and say to him, Lord, give me this living water. The secret is to be willing to come and see for yourself somebody who can look at you and tell you all things that ever you did. Have you got things wrong with you? Well, there are reasons why. And only Jesus knows how to fix them. If we let him, he will. Thank you so much for the courtesy of your attention this morning. Amen.